The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. We're here every weekday afternoon, and we begin each hour with our impact segment, 20-plus minutes of uninterrupted dialogue and discussion. We were out yesterday, late President's Day, and I got a text from a friend who had not heard an interview that we ran yesterday before, and texted me as if it was on the air. And I explained to him I wasn't working, and anyway, back and forth. We are going to rebroadcast an interview. I'm not sure when, but I didn't plan on mentioning this, but let me try to convey something that I've not shared, and it's been at least a week. I lost a very dear friend. I think it's been a week now. Maybe it's been 2 weeks. Now, I began my radio program on KKLA in 2013. And in the fall of 2013, I had been contacted by a PR company about an actress who was one that I knew. I watched her TV series, The Wonder Years. And it was an article on her spirituality. I'm talking about Allie Mills Bean. And so I don't remember all the ins and outs, but I eventually reached out to her and invited her on the program. And she graciously accepted. And we sat in the studio for an hour and got to talking about faith and spirituality. Now, I don't know Allie's experience of what happened, you know. We need to own our own subjective interpretation of things. Because oftentimes in this day and age, like the left's agenda is you either agree with them or you pay the price. But I think there's nuances to interpretation and the whole ability to speak. If I spoke or if you spoke to an auditorium of 100 people, and say your speech was all written down, so you literally read from what you had written. Safe to say there would be 100 different interpretations, little nuances of what you shared. And so when I had Allie on, my goodness, larger than life, wonderful woman, loved the Wonder Years. And we got to talking about spirituality, and she became a Christian, and we had gotten into the conversation on the air about did she ever give her life to Christ. And anyway, some things happened in that first interview. And then I found out she was married to Orson Bean, who many of you know. Recently, we heard the tragic story that he was hit by a car. I think it was a week or two ago. I don't know. It was a Saturday night. That's all I know. And so after Allie and I did the program, in fact, Orson called in that day and said, "What are you doing to my wife?" He was always just a lighthearted, funny, but very intelligent, very deep, very politically astute, just an incredible man. And so my wife and I began to, well, we had dinner over at their place a few times. We developed a friendship, and then Orson had written a book, and so we invited him back on, and I had asked Chandler, "Hey, can you find an interview I did with Orson Bean when his movie came out? I'd like to maybe listen to it a little bit, but I'd like to kind of re-air it in honor of his life and his legacy." And Chan went through everything middle of last week, and it was nowhere to be found. In the world of computers, sometimes you lose some of the shows. Anyway, he texted me or emailed me over the weekend. He said, "I found it." And he sent it to me, and we've got it. So I'm going to probably replay that interview. I'm not sure when, but I'll let you know. And I just want to publicly say, and I've texted with Allie, Our hearts and prayers need to go out to Allie and their family. And my goodness, Orson Bean touched so many people in his life. He was 91 years young. And it's really challenged me in a lot of ways. I hadn't talked to the little communication I had in the last few years with O, that's what we call him, was in an email. And my wife and I went and saw a play that they were doing in Venice about a year ago, and he will be forever missed. And I did have Allie on the program, I think it was middle of last year, with her new spiritual teacher of the church that she goes to. And anyway, again, I'm not sure if there's anything here. All I know is we know these things. We know life is short. We never know. You know, and with the whole Kobe Bryant tragedy of a few weeks ago now, it just kind of jars you into, again, hey, that's right. This is it right here and now. And so I just hope you know how grateful I am for you and for your support of this radio program. That would be probably 99.5% of you. There's a small element of you. You're loud and you don't like me so much, and you make it known. And every once in a while, I get tired of reading the emails. But all in all, it's a blessing to be here. And I think we just need to, as the body of Christ, we need to get over our petty differences. And we need to kind of get on, at least in the same back 40, where we're like, okay, you and I disagree here, but ultimately we're brothers and sisters in Christ. And some of us can't even seem to agree on who Jesus is. Like, we've got different interpretations. But all I know is, man, life is short, and you never know. And O was, he was a young 91, I'll just say that. And then to go out that way, it's just, my goodness, life is just so hard sometimes in this fallen world we live in, and just a whole array of things. So I'd been meaning to share that, and it's kind of gone by the wayside. And then when Chan sent me the interview and I started listening over the weekend, it just brought up a lot of stuff. So Allie, we love you, and we'll look forward to seeing you at O's Honor of Life. And I want my listeners to know, when I decide when I'm going to play this interview, because it is powerful. And it was based on a book that Orson finally wrote. Okay. So we're back today. We were off yesterday. And, man, there's some stories in the news. I'm really getting tired of the sexual gender stuff. I mean, every day there's more and more. I asked one of our personalities here, I won't name who it was, but I said, hey, you into, like, action heroes, superheroes? And said person said, yeah. I go, you Spider-Man? Oh, yeah. The story now is the next Spider-Man movie, he's going to have a boyfriend. And they're probably going to kiss on screen. It's like, enough. Enough of this. In fact, I just saw a reaction in the other room. Let me read the story just so I'm accurate here. Report says that Sony plans to feature Spider-Man as bisexual in the upcoming movie. Entertainment blog We Got This Covered, citing anonymous but reliable sources, said that Sony is developing a live-action Spider-Verse movie that would unite Holland and his predecessors. I don't know who these people are. Some do. Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield. The studio is, quote, particularly keen on getting Garfield back, as they want to portray his version of the hero as bisexual and give him a boyfriend in the film, end quote. In an interview last year, Holland, who currently plays Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, was asked if a gay Spider-Man could make it to the movies. Without missing a beat, of course. I can't talk about the future of the character because, honestly, I don't know. It's out of my hands. But I do know a lot about the future of Marvel. They're going to be representing lots of different people in the next few years. Adding, the world isn't as simple as the straight white guy. It doesn't end there, and these films need to represent more and more of this type of person, end quote. By the way, movies and television programming geared toward our children are increasingly featuring of LGBT-identified characters. Last July, Disney Channel series Andy Mack made history by depicting the network's first teenage gay couple. Season 3 finale of the series concluded with a scene between Cyrus Goodman confessing his attraction to his classmate T.J. Kippen. Last year, a major gay rights organization, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, began pushing for 20% of all television characters to be LGBT by the year 2025. And then that goes on with her statement, of which I don't care to read. Speaking of movies, I did see a movie Saturday night. I've not been to the movies. I'm sure I've gone to a movie or two this last year, 2019, but few and far between. And so Saturday night, I had the opportunity, and I turned to my lovely wife and said, I think I'm going to go to the movies. Are you okay? She goes, sure. What are you going to go see? I said, 1917. I said, do you want to go? She goes, no, I'm out. So have you seen the movie 1917? I got one thumb up in the other room. Chan, have you seen it yet? We need to all go. Big Wave Dave wants to go. We'll go one night after work. So I don't want to give anything away other than it is one of the most powerful movies I've ever seen. And they do something in the movie that I got really hung up on, and it was bothering me. And for those of you that have seen the movie, you may not have even noticed. But I have a background in motion pictures. My dad was a lighting director for decades, and I did a little bit of work in the studio, and I did some acting. In fact, I dug out one of the movies, short movies I did over the weekend, and watched that. I'm going to bring it in for the crew. You want to talk about what am I doing on the screen? I don't even know. It's funny at the least. But so I grew up kind of with an eye for movies, and what I used to notice, because my father was a lighting director, I used to watch scene to scene and the way they would set up lights, because there's a key light and a fill light. And it got to a point that I used to ask my dad, because he wouldn't go to the movies. I said, has it ruined it for you? He goes, yeah, that's all I see is the lighting in movies. So I go to 1917, and the scene opens up. It's the two primary players in the movie, and they get up, and camera, sweeping camera move, really powerful, follows them, and I'm watching as this unfolds, and we're a couple minutes into the movie, and it dawns on me, hey, this is all the same scene. When are they going to cut away? And literally, more time goes by, and it's still all the same scene, and it starts bugging me, like, okay, and it was taking me out of the movie. And then I just kind of gave up. What I didn't know, and again, maybe you've not noticed, but if you do go see the movie, it's the first time ever in cinematic history, Sam Mendes, who did this movie, he was the director, and I believe he wrote it, they shot it as if it was all one scene. Now, did they literally do that? No, because during the movie, I started thinking, okay, is this a play? How are they doing this? And so after the fact, and it could have saved me a little bit of frustration, you can Google it yourself. Maybe some of you have. Was 1917 all one scene? And what they decided was, in the creative process, they're going to shoot it visually like it's just one complete storyline. And the edits and the weaves into the movie are so undetectable. It's just amazing. So I would encourage all the men listening to go see 1917. There are some very dramatic underlying messages and symbolism about the movie. And I'm not going to give any of it away, but I've not really been moved in a long time after I've seen a movie. And I do want to go back again. And the way it got in my radar, there's a pastor who I'm becoming good friends with. His name is Pastor George Hurt. He's been on this program. His church is Mount Sinai in Los Angeles. And recently I spoke at the men's ministry one Saturday morning, and We were just kind of sitting around before worship started, and he said, have you seen 1917 yet? And I said, no. He goes, you need to see it. So that was in the back of my mind, and a few weeks later I saw it, and just I'm still processing a lot of what I witnessed. Here's the last thought. Again, I had no intention of getting into this at all. Other than the obvious how powerful movies are, especially good movies, bad movies are powerful too. I've been running to the exits on more than one occasion when I've seen bad movies because they're just you can't tolerate it because it's on the big screen. But 1917 is a masterpiece, and Sam Mendes, incredible job. And when you talk about manhood, when you talk about the hero's path, when you talk about scripturally that greater no love that he that someone to lay his life down for his friend, that's what I got out of this movie. And I don't even know, and I didn't do any investigating. I don't know if Sam Mendes is Christian. Again, I don't know anything other than for me, it was about as biblically powerful as anything I've seen. And maybe that's just a testimony on my walk now with the Lord and where I'm at. We're 4 days away from our Kingdom Men's Gathering Saturday, of which my focus has been on the gathering and getting everything locked in and the speakers and biblical manhood. I'm going to be giving a message on preparation. Are you prepared? And this movie really spoke to me. I kind of had a funny thought. Maybe we'll just run 1917 at the Kingdom Men's Gathering this Saturday. I think it would change men's lives. So anyway, okay. We're going to continue in a moment, open the phone lines. I've got two stories in front of me. The top list of the 50 most sinful states. We'll share that. Also, a story out of our state of California. And the response to finding that a bill that decriminalized retail theft and the impact it's had and what the numbers say. You may or may not know, wasn't that long ago where, as I understand the story, a bill was passed in California where they decriminalized, or at least if you steal something less than $1,000, you won't be prosecuted. And I hearken back to my days in the grocery markets when shoplifting and things would be taken. And every once in a while, you'll see a video on social media of a grab and go where 3, 4, 5 people walk into a jewelry store and they just start smashing and taking. It's all this insanity of what's going on in our state. So we've got those two stories, others as well, and your calls. Always welcome your participation in the program. 888-528-2557. The phone lines are wide open to you. And as we go to break, I'll just briefly mention this Saturday, it's our Kingdom Men's Gathering at Faithful Central Bible Church. We ran yesterday, Tim Brown, the interview that I did the end of last week. And that's the one my friend said, hey man, I don't know who Tim Brown is, but that was pretty powerful. So Tim Brown is one of our keynote speakers. Daryl Strawberry just texted me and wants to come on the program this week. He said, hey, when do you want me to come on? Literally as I'm sitting here. So we'll get D on this week. Other incredible speakers, Matthew Barnett from the Dream Center, Bishop Ken Ulmer, it's his church. Charles Paul, the father of Chris Paul, who had an incredible all-star game, evidently. I was watching videos last night of Chris. Worship. And we've got some spots available. We released 112 seats this morning. If you've not gotten your ticket, if you're kind of Mr. Last Minute, or somehow your schedule has just opened up, we'd love to see you this Saturday at Faithful Central. Go to franksontag.com. That's a domain we just kind of got for this. It's easier to remember than my ministry website. Go to franksontag.com right now for any information. And we've got special group rates available as well. We hope to see you this Saturday. We will be addressing biblical masculinity. What does it mean to be a man of God? And yes, all ages. Got an email from a listener in Nevada who says he's going to make the drive, wants to bring his 16-year-old son. I said, bring him. Yes, bring your sons, bring your dads, granddads, uncles. We're all going to meet this Saturday at Faithful Central. Go to franksontag.com right now. This is the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. We're going to share a few stories later in the program. Evidently, a man in Kentucky has been awarded $150,000 because he insisted as an atheist he get the personalized plate called I'm God. And not only did he get the plate, but he's $150,000 richer. We'll get into that. And we're going to go wide varied here. By the way, Doreen in Long Beach, you're going to be my first call. We're going to talk about that story as well. There has been an ongoing dispute over, and this is a hot button issue, but since something appeared over the weekend, I'm like, truth is truth. So we hear about the current administration and immigration. Those of you listening in San Diego, this is a big issue for you, being close to the border. And was the Trump administration the only one that put children in quote-unquote cages? Well, evidently, during an interview with Joe Biden, something was revealed that if you did not hear or read what happened, you want to stick around on that one too. But let's talk to Doreen. I've not read the story yet. Prop 47 was passed here in California, all under the idea of helping overcrowded in prisons and lowering this idea of $1,000 or less of stolen merchandise is only a misdemeanor. Doreen in Long Beach. Doreen, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me on your show.
You're welcome.
I was at Stater Brothers the other day. I live in Long Beach, and this guy is walking out as I'm walking in. He looks, you know, physically healthy, nothing wrong with him. He doesn't look like he's homeless or starving. And he's literally walking out with items from Stater Brothers as one of the women work there, follow him and say, excuse me, sir, are you going to pay for that? And he gives her a nice hand gesture. And I'm just looking at him, and he keeps walking, and she's still following him, asking him, are you going to pay for that? And it just shows that this law is crazy, that, you know, they don't have to care or do anything. They just take what they want now. And when is it going to happen when they can just go into somebody's house and take what they want from somebody's house?
Doreen, thank you for calling and for sharing that, and it gives me the opportunity to read the story. A few years ago, California passed one in a series of bills aimed at emptying the jails and prisons. It's Proposition 47. The proposition, named the Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act, said its stated purpose was to keep nonviolent offenders out of jail. To achieve this goal, the state decriminalized a number of lesser offenses, including retail theft. Let me stop there. I'm just getting the sense there are some of you that have not heard of this before, even though it's been somewhat covered in the news. So let me read on after those of you, maybe few and far between, give you a moment to get over the shock factor. Listen to this. The law raised the value of the amount of merchandise someone can actually steal while still only being charged with a misdemeanor was, well, I guess a penny below $1,000. So up until $1,000, you can go in and steal basically anything, and if you get caught, it's a misdemeanor. This story reads, to the great surprise of the government, people noticed this change and began taking advantage of it. They have now recorded multiple years of steadily increasing organized robbery. These plots are known as mass grab and dash thefts. They generally involve large numbers of young people, all entering a store at the same time, grabbing armfuls of merchandise and dashing back out to their vehicles and hitting the highway. Not only are these type of robberies on the rise, but arrests and prosecution are down. Nobody is seriously contesting the numbers. The local and state police organizations blame Proposition 47. Here's one journalist's commentary on this story. When you make it easier and less risky to steal large amounts of goods, people will steal more merchandise. Did it really take a rocket scientist to figure this one out? By California passing Prop 47, it now basically incentivized crime and potential criminals answering that call, since many of them were only getting the equivalent of a parking ticket for stealing $900 worth of goods. Police frequently did not expend much energy trying to catch them. And then the writer of this piece says, the ball's in your court, California. Do you plan on doing something about this? Or will you essentially just legalize theft and tell the retailers that they're out on their own? So I don't know if there'll be much of a response, if any, or maybe it'll be large. Anything you want to share about this? Maybe you're a business owner. God forbid, maybe you've experienced this. But all I know is when it comes to litigation and propositions in our state, I'm going to temper my words when it comes to our newly elected governor and where he's at on some things. I made mention with capital punishment being outlawed, he's all about now 700 death row inmates are going to be turned out to less secured prisons, released in general population, rehab programs pending their executions. This is the mindset of our governor. And when it comes to things like crime, here's something you may or may not know as a Christian, because I know we kind of get the soft gospel, if you will. When it comes to government, it's undeniable in the Bible, and I challenge you to find it if you don't know this. It's easy enough if you have an interest and an inclination to find out what the scriptural truth is. But one of the primary reasons God created governments was to mete out and to enforce justice. That's how we're to look to government. That's one of their primary roles. And when you see more and more of the left's mindset about things like this, oh, we're just going to decriminalize some things. Or if you look to those that are running for positions of the upper echelon in politics, if you read between my words, I'm talking about the presidential races and some of the debates. Some of the leading candidates are talking about, let's just decriminalize all drugs. Like somehow that's going to really address the issue. But that's the mindset we live in. We live in a time now with gender neutrality and equality. It seems to be popping up everywhere. Public school systems. Now, without even an opt-out clause in California, parents find themselves with the, I think in some ways, what you knew on some level was going to come one day because you have your child in a public school. But now this idea of speaking all about gender and there is no such thing. And there you are, where maybe you're going to be forced to file lawsuits. 82%, according to a Barna research study, 82% of evangelicals send their children to public schools. I don't get that one. And I'm not going to be harsh, but I'm just going to be honest. I had to take a loan out at an APR that's unbelievable to send my son through school. But I'll do what I'm going to do. And I get economics are a factor. But what are we thinking about? And yeah, I think there's a time to state your claim and engage in the battle. And maybe for you, it's the sex curriculum in public schools. I honor that. But it's kind of undeniable what's going on in society right now. I had Robert Jeffress on last week. His new book is called Courageous. Phenomenal book. In fact, maybe I'll bring it in tomorrow and read some where he goes through. It's kind of, I think he said on another program, it's not if, it's when culture will completely become secularized. How are we going to respond? And are you preparing right now for this? I think for some of us, we throw our hands up in the air and we're so frustrated and I can't deal with it. So we just go the way of denial. Or we're just kind of indifferent. Oh, we're supposed to love people. So I don't want to upset people. So I'll just kind of do the opt out here in my own engagement of said issue. And I'm not saying I have the gift of prophecy. I pray this doesn't happen. But you just kind of read the signs. It looks like things are accelerating at a pace that I've never experienced before. And it just seems like what is now becoming and called normal is not normal. And you can fill in the blank on that one of all the array of areas in society that are not normal that are being called normal. Not only that, if you have any type of a perspective like, no, I don't agree with that. You're the one you're labeled the bigot or the hate monger, or you're intolerant. When you talk about curriculum in public schools all across the country. Here's a story out of Wisconsin. A group of 14 parents from 8 families have filed a lawsuit. And let me, before I read the story, that's what it's going to take right here in California. Parents have to start filing lawsuits. A group of 14 parents from 8 families filed a lawsuit against a Wisconsin school district over its policy requiring teachers to call students by their preferred names and pronouns. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty filed a lawsuit against the Madison Metropolitan School District. The suit was filed on behalf of a group of parents, most of whom are Christian. The lawsuit opposes the school district's policies that allow children of any age to change their gender identity at school without parental consent. MMSD, which again is the Madison Metropolitan School District, adopted a set of guidelines on transgender and non-binary students in April of 2018. The guidelines stipulate that children of any age are allowed to transition to a different gender identity at school. The affirmation of a student's preferred name and gender can be done, quote, regardless of parent and or guardian permission to change their name and gender in the district's system, end quote. The lawsuit claims that the policy goes as far as to prohibit school district employees from notifying parents that the child will have their preferred pronoun and name affirmed at school. Lawsuit further argues that the school district policy requires teachers and staff to what they call deceive parents by using the student's name and biological pronouns whenever they are around the child's parents. Triple 8528 2557. Chris in Cerritos. Chris, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Frank.
Hi, Chris.
Really good. Yeah, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to pick up my son at school, and I happened to flip on your show, hear the thing. I just wanted to tell you I love that interview you did with the guy at Angora Prison. That was absolutely out of sight because basically the warden came in. He didn't, like, let everybody out of prison. He went ahead and respected the fact that they had been sentenced to go there maybe the rest of their lives, and he gave them a life within the prison by introducing them to Jesus Christ and bringing Christ into the prison. But he respected the law of the land and didn't just let them out, like you were just talking about with Gavin Newsom. I just refer you to the last verse in the book of Judges. It's not the only place in Judges it says this, but it says there was no king in the land, so everyone did that which was right in his own eye.
Yep.
And for the context there, you just go to Proverbs, where there's at least two verses by Solomon, the wisest man except Jesus that ever walked the earth, according to Philippians. And he said there's a way that seems right to a man, and in the end thereof are the ways of death. So we happen to live in a country, it was born in revolution. There's no, Jesus never advocated revolution. There is no revolution advocated anywhere in Scripture against the government. But our country was born in revolution. I've read the Declaration of Independence. It was written by Thomas Jefferson. The Jefferson Bible that was found after his death, he had cut all the miracles out of the Bible. Now, I love the fact that we have the history we have. I'm a true blue, red, white, and blue American patriot. I'm in a country I was born in. My dad did 35 years in the Navy. I did over 20. My sister did 20. We're totally patriotic. And I love the Lord Jesus Christ. He is my king. I would go, I hope, to the chopping block before I would take any law of man over the law of God.
Well, let me respond only because we're way late for a break. Chris, thank you for being so articulate. By the way, if you did not hear the interview that Chris is alluding to, it was with Dr. Mark Baker from LaVie Counseling, talking about Burl Cain, the warden that went into Angola prison and really transformed that place. Dr. Baker has a new book out called You Can Change, Stories from Angola Prison and the Psychology of Personal Transformation. It is a must read. Chris, again, thank you for the call. 888-528-2557. We will continue with more of the Frank Sontag Show next. Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. Little Phil Wickham for you. If you're just tuning in, we're talking actually about a few different stories. One is Prop 47 and how young vandals are using this, primarily young vandals, to do smash and goes, grab and goes, where we have passed in our state through Prop 47. Anything under $1,000 of stolen goods is now a misdemeanor. We also talked about a story out of Wisconsin where 14 parents are suing the school system because their children are being taught education along the lines of no such thing as gender, and as Christians, they're pretty outraged. Let's talk to Eileen. Eileen in Tarzana. Eileen, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
I retired from the school district, like in 2017 or 2017. And I go in to substitute, and I feel very nervous about saying this, but the school district is a mess. The kids aren't learning the way they used to. They have a lot of C-average teachers these days, and they're doing everything but teaching. And they may take a certain subject, whether it be math or English language arts, and they do a 15-minute teaching on it, and then they say to the kids, and maybe they give one or two examples on the door, blackboard, and then they say, go ahead and finish the pages yourself. And the kids aren't getting enough repetition, enough examples. And I look at their little faces in second and third grade. I do everything from preschool up to 12th grade. And they look so worried because they didn't get everything that was just done. And if I was their age, I wouldn't have gotten it either.
Well, let me ask a question, if I may. How many years did you, and you may have said this, I'm sorry I missed it. How many years did you actually teach before you retired?
For about 10 years, and it's closer to 14, but it was different then.
I was going to say, and all in the public school system, correct?
Yes, and if parents really knew what was going on, and I work at, now I go in my substitute, and I work at a much better public school, which I'm not going to name.
Okay,
everybody who's there wants to be there.
Yep.
But still, you know, and I'm complimented that they call me back because it's about the kids and it's about teaching. But if parents knew what was going on in the classrooms, and you know, you can walk into a classroom and nothing's going on. You know, the kids are just talking, you know, with their friends.
Well, I apologize. I need to interrupt because we've got a bunch of calls and we have to take another break. Thank you. And also, when you say if parents knew, that's kind of an area that I struggle with. Because I think some parents do know, some parents don't know, and maybe some in the middle. But if parents don't know, why don't they know? And there may be a small contingent. I pray it's very few, a small minority. But, you know, parents overwhelm, both may be hardworking. So it's hard to be very proactive in the school system and go to parent-teacher meetings and be involved in what's going on in the curriculum. But I think that circumstances almost dictate now that if you are going to send your child to a public school, you need to be literate as to what's going on in that school and whatever you need to do. Board meetings, set up teacher conferences, talk to the principal. You need to be proactive because we literally are subjecting our children to an ideology that if you are one of the Christian faith and you have your child in a public school, this is something that I pray maybe is a wake-up call for you to get involved and to, and maybe some of you are already doing that. And I commend you for that. But I just have to, and I'm not one to, you know, jump off the ship. I'm a confront and engage guy. But I just have to wonder out loud for those of us that profess faith in Christ, why are our kids in public schools? And I think as Eileen accurately portrayed, and granted, not all public schools are the same. So I don't want a broad stroke like somehow they're all one and the same. Years ago, my wife and I lived in Ventura County in a small town called Oak Park. Beautiful place. But I did the story a few weeks ago how one school, which will go unnamed, parents are outraged because they're finding out what their kids are being taught now as it applies to sex identification and how you identify with gender. Overcrowded board meetings where parents are just ranting and raving about why don't they know about this? So maybe at the very least, this is a call to parents for parents to really become proactive. I mean, we are engaged in half-off tuition. You can go to our websites, kprz.com, kkla.com, where we partner with Christian schools in your community for half the price of tuition. Because I think for some of us, you know, Frank, easy for you, but I can't afford public or private education. No, not easy for me. I took a loan out at a high APR to send my son to school. To a private Christian school. That's the priority. I can make payments monthly. I can somehow make that happen. And I know we're not all the same, but my goodness, maybe it's time to reprioritize. And things have changed. But even that being said, when I was in then junior high school, which is now middle school, I went to a public junior high school for 7th and 8th grade. And I still, this day, remember the argument in the kitchen with my family. Like, no, he's going to a private Christian school. We're done with this. Some things that happen. They found some notes. Just stuff that happens at public schools when it comes to, like, the lack of an understanding or a biblical worldview. And I praise my mom and dad for sending me to Notre Dame in the Valley. Didn't like it at the time. Look back now. It was a good 4 years of my life. This is the Frank Sontag Show.